My name is Hauke, and I work for the German section of Reporters Without Borders in Berlin. And my work mainly focuses on digital security for journalists. What does surveillance mean for journalists, and what can we do to lessen surveillance, especially, of course, in authoritarian regimes, but as we see now with all the NSA revelations, also in the USA and Europe. So I'm going to assume that most of you know Reporters Without Borders. I just quickly say a few words about it. So we are an international NGO, and we are defending journalism wherever it occurs, so we are not limited to people who have this I am a journalist card, but of course we are defending bloggers, we're defending also like comedians, satirists, and we are not limited to a certain media or something. We do raise awareness when the freedom of the press and freedom of information is under threat around the world. And to do so, we have several offices and sections of Reporters Without Borders, and we have a network of correspondents around 170 worldwide who report to us, to our headquarters in Paris, to say what's the state of press freedom in a certain country. We do publish rankings to see how is the situation in a country at a given time. And what we also do, which is a very important part of our work, is that we help journalists in need. So if a journalist is in jail, we try to get help with lawyers, with publicity. We also, if somebody is beaten up and needs medical help, we do that. For some journalists, we help them when they need to go in exile. And to come to another country and maybe continue their work as a journalist from there. So we are, of course, also fighting against online censorship. For example, we have a website, it's called wefightcensorship.org, which republishes material censored somewhere around the world. So you have an article from Vietnam, let's say, which has content about corruption there, and then it's censored. And so normally in Germany or in Europe, you would read the story. A journalist has been put into jail because he made certain allegations about corruption, but you almost never get the article behind it. And so what we try there is we put up the original source, we translate it in some languages so that people around the world are able to see this content. The website is broadly mirrored. There's also a version with a .onion domain, so you can see it from inside the Tor network. So we make it hard to block and censor this website. So that is one of the things we do there. The website also has an anonymous submission forum, so if you have content that you want to get to us, you can always use this site. We are also mirroring censored websites. We did so, for example, with WikiLeaks for a long time until they published the names of sources and people appeared in these cables. And that is, of course, so we defend, of course, source protection around the world. And so then we stopped to mirror the website. So why are we fighting against surveillance? Of course, journalists, when it comes to surveillance, are high-value targets. Many journalists have a lot of interesting information themselves, their research, their interviews they do. But also, if you do surveillance of a journalist, you can expose a whole network of people they are speaking with. So what the NSA is calling contact chaining. European and Western companies are among the top suppliers of surveillance solutions to governments around the world. And we think that is a situation that we cannot accept because source protection is indeed one of the most integral parts of journalism. It's not only a moral obligation to do so, but it is also a prerequisite for journalism to be able to exist. There's a longer quote, which you can't see, unfortunately, now. The president of Associated Press, he went public some weeks after the allegations that they have been surveilled extensively by the American government. And he said that they had a lot of sources that have been talking to them for many, many years, but now they stopped. They wouldn't come to them anymore. They wouldn't send emails. They didn't want to call in, and they wouldn't even meet in person because they feared that they'd be exposed. And so they had a real, real big problem. And they said this is a chilling effect of surveillance, which does not only target AP, but also other media in the United States. And that is why we need to... So now you see my background. Aha, so that was a quote from Mr. Pruitt from AP. So what did we do in the 1 year we are now working on this issue? We published our report about the enemies of the internet, and this time was the first time that we included private companies because we felt that they share a big deal of responsibility for this kind of surveillance. We actually got some very funny answers from the companies after we published the report. Trovacore, for example, they said, "We do only build relational database systems." So I think in the monitoring center solutions they are making, of course, the storing of data is a part of what they do. But of course, it's much, much more than just MySQL databases or something. We also had Bula Mesis. They sold their monitoring business, and they are now calling it Naxos, and it's now in Dubai somewhere. But it was only in last November, and they said, "Why can't you blame us? We sold it like 3 months ago." But they did in fact supply Gaddafi and Libya with their DPI system. So they are actually now in France. They are being sued by FIDH. It's a human rights group, for complicity in torture, and this is an ongoing process, but it has been accepted and is now for further consideration into the court. We have, of course, Blue Code, which is also a very big player. They are doing DPI systems, and they are also active. They have been active in Myanmar, for example. They have Blue Code service in Syria and in many other countries. Gamma International is also a big player with a FinFisher system, which is now also has been bought by the German government, although it's unclear if it's even legal to use it here. And we also focus on the states that use surveillance the most, so Vietnam, China, Bahrain, Syria, and Iran. There was, maybe now, one could add the US, of course, and the UK. Another thing we did that was earlier this year, we filed with other organizations like Privacy International, the ECCHR, and two Bahraini organizations. We filed OECD complaints against two of these companies. The one in the UK was Gamma International because they are headquartered there. This complaint has now been accepted for further consideration by the British government, and we will enter a mediation process now. So there's no more information, and this will be a process I can't talk about in public, but we're very interested to see what's going on there. The request is still pending in Germany, and the national contact point, which is responsible, is situated inside the Ministry of Economic Affairs, and they are not very open, and they don't seem to like it very much. So we are still pressuring them, and we are looking what's coming out there. We have to wait. So this instrument is based on OECD guidelines for multinational companies. They have to respect human rights, of course, and their supply chain also. And it has been used widely by human rights organizations, for example, with respect to child labor. And now we have this with respect to the internet and surveillance. It's a quite weak legal tool, but it's useful to help raise awareness, and it's also to foster our research in this area. There's one topic which might be a little controversial, especially around here, the question, do we need regulation to target this problem? Of course, many people here think of the crypto wars and fear that, like, hacker tools, for example, would be made illegal. We don't think that. We think there is a possibility to make this without harming freedom of speech and without harming open source tools to circumvent censorship and surveillance. So we have three targets. One is the Wassenaar arrangement. It's an international body which regulates weapons trade and weapons. It has 42 signatory states, and they are right now discussing if they should include Trojan horses, for example, in this kind of regulation. We are also aiming at the EU level with the dual-use regulation and the national legislation, for example, in Germany, to just stop the export of such technology to oppressive regimes. We want, of course, that there is a complete exemption for all free and open source software, so in order to not harm tools like Tor, for example. And we don't want to target hacker tools either, so something like maybe Wireshark or so. We just want them to target the worst of the worst software and technology first. So if you look at the marketing materials the companies provide, they sometimes have a video and they say, our tool is perfect to monitor the complete opposition in your country, and you can just like surveil hundreds of thousands of people at once from one computer you have. And so we think that if you look at the advertising material and what the company says, you can say very clearly what is a bad thing and what's a good thing and what should be banned. We had an initial meeting with different NGOs to start an international campaign, but right now, in the light of the newest revelations, we have to refocus our work to see, what should we do? How could we tackle this problem? But we have different things we thought of. So one of the things would be transnational freedom of information requests to get more information about what governments are doing, how they may be supporting even these firms. We want to build a common information base. We have a lot of partners, but we are still looking for partners from the global south. So this is very important for us to not only make it like a Western coalition. The question is, how could hackers help in this process? I think it's one of the important things is to train more journalists to use secure communication, to make crypto parties, to raise awareness, and to help people who want to use these tools. They are not so complicated anymore, but it's still like a high barrier for many people. So I think there's a lot of stuff that can be done. I think we also need more research into what kind of malware and Trojan horses is used around the world, where are servers, who is targeted, and I think there's a lot of things that could be done. So there are some, like the Citizen Lab, they're working on this and they're doing great work, but I think there can't be enough people working on this. Of course, one should maybe not work with these kind of companies, so sometimes it's known that these companies even go to universities and do some kind of hack day and try to get people to make an internship, and people maybe don't really know what they're doing there and what kind of technology they're involved developing. So I think it's also important to talk about this kind of work and what could be done there. And of course, to map sales and networks that exist in this area. So you can always contact us. You find a lot of information about our work at reporterohnegrenzen.de, or you find the Enemies of the Internet report under surveillance.rsf.org, where you can see it. I mentioned the platform we have, wefightcensorship.org. You can contact me via email or Jabber. You can come to me for PGP if you like. And you can, of course, connect on Twitter. And now I'm very happy to discuss the issues I raised. Thank you. I think we have a microphone.
Thank you very much. Can you get into more details how you differentiate between the software you want to regulate and other software? Everyone here knows marketing is not a very reliable source.
I think marketing is in some cases really. Really good thing. If you look at the materials that you can maybe find on WikiLeaks, or that you even can find on the websites of these firms, but then you can see that a lot of these firms exclusively sell to government agencies, and that is, I think, one of the things that you could also can also see, and then you can also look at how these firms. Are working in terms of services. So they often provide training services. They go to the countries and they map like the network before, and to see where can we base our infection proxies and this kind of stuff.
A government regulation that targets you can sell a software to governments. It's a little bit illusory.
So I don't say that this is the only criteria, but if you look at why should these kind of Trojan horses be sold to any government? That is one question I would raise, and especially to a government which has no rule of law whatsoever. So what's a good purpose of this?
It's a good question to begin, but it's impossible to put this in a legal language, in regulation. You need different criteria.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, and there's a lot of work to be done, obviously, on the definition. But you can also look at export control sanctions that are now in place against Syria and Iran, for example. There are also certain definitions on what is equipment to spy on people. What are Trojan horses, what are kind of mass surveillance systems, IMSI catchers, and all this.
Do you have any idea on how much you're missing out? I mean, you have this list of these companies already, but all these leaks by Snowden show how much is happening under the radar, and I can imagine that it's really hard to figure out how many companies, like which companies are exporting where and producing which software. Do you have like a vague idea of how much surveillance is happening and how much you like how much this dark number is of companies you can't access, or is it just that you say, oh, we're trying to get there and we can't estimate it?
Well, estimations are that are. Worldwide, there are at least 300 companies who are specialized, really specialized in this kind of government-grade surveillance technology. And so we picked like the five where there was documented evidence that they sold the stuff to oppressive regimes. But there are many, many more. And there are, of course, like those are examples which are quite clear. So you see this kind of Trojan horses that. To target very directly, that go very, very deep. There are other kinds of technology. If you look at deep packet inspection, for example, it's much harder to differentiate there. So I think DPI is often and maybe almost ever a problem. But that's a thing that would be harder to regulate, I think.
Sorry. Have you had any success following the strategy of regulating internet surveillance?
So we are in talks, especially with people in the German government, and they are open for this, but there is no regulation yet. But we only started 1 year ago when we first made a position paper on this issue and sent it to different government agencies in Germany, also to the EU Commission. But this is a process that will take time. Uh, we had we had a hearing in Parliament. There was the disarmament body of the Parliament, and they were also quite open for this issue. It was a bipartisan interest, so I think that is a good sign. But yeah, I think it's a long way to go.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for your talk. And also a question, also about the list of companies that you gave earlier. Are there any Dutch companies as well in the list of around 300 that you gave as an answer to the question before? And if so, is there any that you could name?
So I'm not aware of big players from the Netherlands. So sorry about that. But what I can say about the Netherlands is that they are right now preparing a proposal that would allow the Dutch government to hack computers, basically. And then it is suspected that they bought software from DigiTask, or technology from DigiTask, some years ago, which we know is a very reliable and good working software. So there's a lot of things happening there, but I'm not aware of companies. Sorry.
You forgot to mention the OECD lawsuit you're just launching.
No? The OECD complaints.
Oh, so I didn't. It was just me, sorry.
Yeah, thank you.